evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, May 5th, 2021. Families affected by floods in Jonglei State demand transparency in the handling of donations.
So the ratio that was given is not enough. So it has not been enough, and it did not reach the people who are here living in Bor.
And some residents of South Sudan's capital, Juba, say health officials ignore patients who need help at health centers.
Before even the woman could not reach where my mom is to just check how, like a lot of things, she did not even come.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some civil society activists in the Jonglei State capital, Bor, have accused state officials of allegedly stealing food items donated by President Salva Kiir to flood victims. The chairperson of the Jonglei State Civil Society Network says he spotted some of the items being offloaded into shops. The deputy mayor of Bor municipality says he's aware about the complaints but denies his office took donated food to the market. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
David Garangoch, chairperson of the Jonglei Civil Society Network, says he spotted some of the food items being offloaded from a truck to shops at Maror Market this week.
Because the food that was brought by the prison is different from the food Abaji is having in their shop. So the color is different, even the writing is different. It is written KKM and is brought by the German. So this food is different from what is here already.
The deputy mayor of Bor municipality, Mabil Tot, who was tasked with distributing the food aid to beneficiaries, admits, staunchly denies any donated food items were sold in markets. He says his office turned over the food donations to leaders of residential areas to be distributed to flood victims last week. He says it is possible that the recipients took donated food to the market.
There's no food remain in the store that the municipality can supply. The food we already distribute to the blocks, we already give again to the IDP. We just give again to the all institutions, association. We just give, we distribute like that because municipality have no capacity to distribute the food hours to hours. We just plan to divide the food according to blocks.
Garang says the amount which he saw being offloaded to shops for sale was too big to belong to individuals. He says there is no reason why the food insecure people would sell the shares of the presidential food donation.
So the ratio that was given is not enough. So it has not been enough, and it did not reach the people who are here living in Bor. Most of the people now are left out and people are crying. Those who have given got little, they said it was only very small that was given to them. Like for the case of oil, it is only a bottle of water that is being divided by two families. Imagine. And how much oil was brought? It has been taken to the ministries by the government.
Garang is urging the office of the president to investigate what happened to the food donation and take appropriate measures against those found responsible for stealing the food aid. More than 100,000 people were affected in Bor town by flash floods following heavy rains and the overflow of the River Nile in 2020, according to the state authorities. Michael Guy, a resident of the Block 2 suburb in Bor town, says he expected to receive his ration of the presidential food aid, but says he received nothing.
When our president came to Bor on 1st of April, he promised that he will support the people who are affected by the flood. And for sure it has happened. I heard that the food items that are brought from the presidency, and up to now, I'm not sure about the procedures being used for distribution, but we were told that the distribution will be in different places like block. So I'm from block 2. Up to now, I've not yet received any information, and even my family have not received anything from this food item.
President Kiir donated 12 trucks of food, mainly maize flour, beans, cooking oil, and wheat flour to flood victims during his visit to Bor on April 1st. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Juba.
Some residents of South Sudan's capital, Juba, are complaining about a shortage of blood at health facilities across the country. Shama Peace is a resident of Juba. She says she lost her mother 3 weeks ago due to what she calls negligence by medical practitioners. The director of South Sudan's National Blood Bank says majority of South Sudanese hate donating blood. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Juba resident Shama Peace says she lost her mother about 3 weeks ago due to what she believes was negligence on the part of medical practitioners at one of the medical facilities in Juba. Peace says her mother was diagnosed with yellow fever and they had spent about a week in the hospital before her mother's condition worsened. She died on Saturday, April 18th. Peace says her mother had a high fever before the medical workers at a health facility in Juba's High Mauna residential area found she had insufficient blood. Peace says they were referred to Juba Teaching Hospital, where they would have access to blood to save her mom. Peace says she did not like the idea of transporting her mother to Juba Teaching Hospital. She heeded the advice of one of her mom's doctors to take her to a major hospital in the Jebel area. Unfortunately, there were no doctors or nurses able to attend to her mom for hours. She says there was enough blood, but the doctors there would not administer it to a patient who was not yet admitted.
They really told me they were like, Shama, we have blood, but the only thing, we need your mom to be admitted and we need a nurse to come and pick the blood in order to be given to your mom. So the only thing that is delaying right now is just for my mom to be admitted.
Peace says her mom was admitted an hour and a half later, but the nurse who was supposed to administer the blood transfusion was busy playing Ludo games and would not come and work until she was done playing her game. Peace says by the time her mom was put on her sick bed, she had already breathed her last breath.
When they are bringing my mom inside to the room, like when they were carrying her from the car, I saw my mom, I actually lost hope. Then they took her inside, like reaching the bed like this, my mom died. Before even the woman could not reach where my mom is to just check how, like a lot of things, she did not even come. I went inside the room, I saw my mom, she was not breathing, I hold her stomach. Then I asked my aunt, I was like, my mom is not breathing. Then they just told me, no, things are going to be fine, you just go out. That's how I just lost my mom.
Peace says her mom fought for her life for 3 hours on the ground of the hospital without any emergency attendance. The Secretary General of South Sudan Doctors Union, Dr. Bol Deng, tells South Sudan in Focus that reluctance of medical practitioners to tend to patients depends on individual professionalism, the working environment of the facility, and the level of motivation by the various health institutions in the country.
These people are doing their best to save lives in hospitals, so we cannot generalize it by saying that all medical doctors or, let's say, nurses or other health professionals are negligent toward the patients. If it happened that there are cases where people are reluctant to carry out their duties, either the administration that is they are working under is not performing it administration duties toward those people, or they are not motivated to do the work that where in the institution where they are working.
Dr. Deng says doctors and nurses' salaries must be increased commensurate with their work. He says they are paid meager wages compared to similar professionals in the region. Dr. Victoria Achut, director of the National Blood Bank Transfusion Services, says there is a high demand for blood in South Sudan. Dr. Achut says only 4,000 people nationwide have registered as regular blood donors, and most of them are from the diplomatic missions in South Sudan. Dr. Achut says most donors have since stopped giving blood after the coronavirus outbreak last year. She says people need to donate blood regularly to help the blood bank to close the large gap in blood donations which health facilities need to treat patients.
Our communities don't understand blood donation. They think that if blood is taken from you, you will die. That's the wrong concept. That mindset needs to change. We need to understand that blood can be taken and you can live like any other person. And that blood gets replaced as soon as possible. Within 24 to 32 hours, the blood goes back to normal. It doesn't mean you will die. And we're not taking your whole blood from your body. It's only few mils that we're taking, and that doesn't kill you.
Dr. Achut says if more people donated their blood on a regular basis, countless lives would be saved in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Officials from the Ministry of Education in South Sudan have told administrators and head teachers of primary schools not to reopen private schools until next week. Simon Dick is the head of teachers at Mentor Nursery and Primary School in Juba. He says every school has a budget and plans for the academic year, adding that high fee charges are meant for providing quality services to students. For VOA News, Viala Elias reports from Juba.
Yata Manas, a parent of three children who attends the Vision Bearer Nursery and Primary School in Juba, the proprietors of private schools should be more considerate when determining the amount of school fees. Manas says most parents are civil servants who earn less than $10 a month and are not able to pay such an amount. He says each parent are asked to pay more than 100,000 South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent to $200 each year. Manas says paying this kind of money is even more challenging for parents who have three or four children in the same school.
This money is really too much because there are people who cannot get such an amount in a year. But even if someone gets such an amount, what about feeding and the rest of the school children? There are parents who have no clear message to others, telling them that if they can't afford private schools, then they should take their children to government schools that pay less. Some parents are the problem, especially those ones who hand in foreign currency. They are not considerate of other parents with low income.
Juba parent Jamie Saban says it is absurd for private schools to increase last year fee of 17,000 South Sudanese pounds to more than 30,000 pounds this year. Saban says parents should not yet pay private school tuition, noting that they were informed schools to wait until the issue of higher fees is resolved by the Ministry of General Education.
We have been informed that the schools need to first settle this issue with the Ministry of Education because this is a big problem. For instance, if I pay this money, how would I feed my family and provide for my children and other needs? These kids have not yet reported back to school because we are still waiting to hear what they have done in regards to the school fee.
Last week, the General Education Ministry issued a statement calling on private schools to remain on hold until government and parents' council agreed on an affordable amount to be paid by each parent yearly. Simon Dick, the head teacher for Mentor Nursery and Primary School in Juba, says although parents' complaints are genuine and based on country's faltering economy and the COVID-19 pandemic, they should also understand that private schools depend on the school fees to pay the salaries of teachers.
A number of private schools have increased school fees based on the budget that they have and also the challenges that the schools are having. So because of that, a meeting was called in Juba, one girls' school, of which they call all the head teachers and the PTA chairpersons of the various schools. And in the meeting, the communication was made by the Honor Secretary and Deputy Minister for Education. So in his communication, he said clearly for reasons that private schools have so much increased school fees, they should first put a halt. No private schools will operate as per now until when they will come up with the resolution to see that the school fees they are charging is fair in a way that parents can pay.
Dick says there are many reasons that compelled private schools to increase their fees, including constructions of classrooms. He says the Ministry of Education should carry out an assessment and identify which private schools that charge excessive fees. Dick says up until now, there has been no proper communication from the Ministry of Education as to when private school will reopen. The Ministry of Education did not immediately respond to a request for a comment. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese journalists are praising the transitional government in Sudan for allowing press freedom. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your biggest regret?
There was a time I beat up my son to the level that he cannot even stand up. So I really pity him, and then I regretted what I did, honestly. And then since then, I have never tried it again.
My biggest regret is when I lost my first wife in 2015, 12 June. But thank God, God has given me another beautiful wife.
I don't have any regret. I have actually tuned myself to know that everything that happens in life is for a purpose.
I can't say I've got a biggest regret, but it's all about challenges. I was able to learn from it and manage it so that, I mean, everything will go smoothly.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some Sudanese journalists are praising the transitional government in Sudan for what they describe as slight improvement in press freedom in the country. But some journalists are still saying some media houses and journalists continue to experience some isolated incidents of threats from their security agents. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
As the world marked the International Press Freedom Day this week, Osman Merghani, editor-in-chief of the Khartoum-based Al-Tayar Arabic Daily Newspaper, says over the past 1 year, there were no reports of threats, confiscation of newspapers, or the closure of any radio station in Sudan.
Nobody asked us not to write or what to write, and nobody can take us now to the prison as in the former regime. And nobody can confiscate the newspaper from the printing house. I think it's ideal after the revolution.
Merghani says, given the fact that the transitional government has yet to form the long-awaited legislative council in accordance with the Juba peace deal, media outlets remain a monitoring body that hold the government accountable for their deeds. He says any Sudanese democratic process needs to promote freedom of expression so that people can speak freely and objectively criticize their leaders.
The requirement for democracy is the press freedom, and this is what is available right now. And to make a very safe transition, we need to have freedom of expression, or we need to make some sort of monitoring the government by the free journalists. This will help the transition for sure.
Other journalists say some media houses and journalists still experience some isolated incidents of threats from security agents. Nashua Ramadan Hussein, a Sudanese freelance journalist who writes for several media outlets in and outside the country, says she is not satisfied with the state of press freedom in Sudan following the revolution that led to the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. Ramadan says reported incidents of threats by Sudanese security operatives against journalists and media houses over the past 1 year contradicts the slogan of the Sudanese revolution that called for freedom, justice, and peace. Ramadan says, we cannot conclude that the revolution has brought some changes. She says, the media system is still the same. The Sudanese media system as an institution has not witnessed any change. There is no promotion or support for journalists, Ramadan says. Mohammed Al-Amin, the Secretary General of Sudanese Media Council, describes the state of press freedom in the country as better than in previous years. Al-Amin says the council has not received any reports of incidents of media outlets being forced to close or cases of newspapers confiscated by security operatives over the past 1 year. He says the Media Council is working with partners to draft media law and another law on access to information that will fully guarantee the independence of the press in the country. Lamin says, currently, we only practice self-censorship policy of each media house. There is an ultimate freedom at the moment. He says, if there are any cross boundaries by any media house, we do encourage complainants concerned to go to the press prosecution department to file an official complaint to deal with the case. We do not have any authority to punish any media house or journalist, Alamin says. Alamin says most media houses in Sudan have suspended operations due to economic hardships affecting the country. He says only 26 media houses are operating in the country out of more than 50 that acquired operational licenses. According to the 2021 Press Freedom Index ranking released by Reporters Without Borders, Sudan moved up from its position of 175 to 159 out of 180 countries. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
India has opened its immunization drive to all adults as it reels under a catastrophic second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. But a shortage of vaccine in the country, often called a vaccine powerhouse, means inoculating a significant part of 1.4 billion population is still a distant goal. Ajana Parisha has the report.
This is the most coveted jab in India as it reels under a ferocious second wave of the novel coronavirus pandemic. But although the inoculation drive for COVID-19 has been expanded to all above 18 years of age, vaccine shortages are hobbling the program.
The situation is extremely grim. I mean, of course, there aren't any words that can explain the situation. It's extremely, extremely grim. The system is at a brink of collapse, and that's the reason why we try to get vaccinated as early as possible.
But some states say they cannot cover the 18-plus age group. They are even turning away older people as vaccine stockpiles fall short of demand. India, the world's largest vaccine producer, was relying on domestically produced doses. But the approximately 70 million shots being produced a month cannot cater to its massive needs.
And if you take the 18 to 44 age group, who are the new entrants into the program, we are talking about 595 million people. So we are talking about 1.2 billion doses, right? Because everybody requires two doses of the vaccine. So, in a sense, it's a huge ask. And our vaccine stocks currently do not measure up anywhere near that.
The government has stepped up efforts to get vaccines from overseas. Sputnik V doses arrived from Russia this week. Efforts are also on to accelerate domestic manufacturing. But it could take months to plug the shortfalls. Experts say India failed to stockpile enough vaccines as it prematurely declared victory against the pandemic during a lull in infections. It sent about 65 million doses to other countries as part of a vaccine diplomacy push.
I think it was sort of factored in their minds that we will not have to deal with the second wave, and therefore we could have a fairly measured, steady, graduated vaccination program which can flow in steps. And that is why we even felt we had the luxury of sending vaccines abroad to about 80 countries.
The sluggish rollout meant the country was largely unprotected when the second wave struck. About 2% of the population has been fully inoculated, while around 10% have received one dose. Now, fear overhangs the worst-hit cities like New Delhi, where hospitals and crematoriums are overwhelmed.
I deleted the social media apps for about a week in the middle because I just couldn't take it. You know, every time you open Twitter and everything, it's full of that. But then I had to get back because I realized that a lot of people are, you know, seeking help on that platform. And if I could be of any help, then I need to be available. So it's very anxious. I mean, the times are very anxious.
That anxiety will remain in a country waging an ongoing battle for hospital beds, drugs and oxygen. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Mumbai.
And now for some sports news. Africa's youngest nation, South Sudan, will be making its second Olympic appearance in Tokyo 10 years after gaining independence. In fact, four South Sudanese athletes have been in Japan since 2019, training for the Tokyo Games. They have been doing their workouts in Miyabashi, about 100 kilometers northwest of Tokyo, to take advantage of Japan's training facilities. Tong Chor Malek is the Secretary General of South Sudan's National Olympic Committee. Mike Bonye asked him about the country's Olympic preparations.
South Sudan is preparing now to go to Tokyo. And we have started preparations since 2019. We have sent four athletes to Mombasa City for camping, called by them, supposed to participate in 2020. So when it defers to 2021, they continue training in Mombasa. So now they are prepared, and when the Olympic Games open, they will be participating there.
How many games did you qualify for the Olympics?
Regarding how many games have qualified, very unfortunate, I will tell you, none of the athletes in various games qualified to Tokyo. But we are depending on what is called universalities for athletics, and then try fight out for taekwondo and boxing and karate, hoping that we'll be given some invitation positions. So the federation we are expecting to participate in Tokyo will be athletics, mainly track and field, and then boxing, then taekwondo and karate.
What are the medal chances of Team South Sudan?
Well, you know, South Sudan is still, we have no proper training centers, infrastructure is very poor, but we send our athletes to nearby countries, Uganda, to Kenya, to Ethiopia, to Sudan. And in Olympic, we are participating in Olympic Games. However, we were expecting to participate in Paralympic Games, whereby we have one athlete for 100 and 200 meters para athletics is in Tokyo and is doing very well now. But South Sudan, unfortunately, is not fully recognized by International Paralympic Committee. But they are doing the best to let South Sudan participate. Our file is in front of Madame Divina Kaiser. They are taking care of the file. We hope at least to participate in Paralympic with some two athletes, a male and female athletes for all the track and field discipline.
That's Tong Chor Malek, Secretary General of South Sudan's Olympic Committee. He spoke with Mike Bonye on telephone from Juba, South Sudan. We'd love to hear what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We'll air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with some traditional Avokaya song recorded in Tore Payam this week. We've been listening to some traditional Avukaya song. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ma jara ko ma
I'm gonna go to the hospital.